ComingToBook.com.
Well, once again, everybody, thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, December 27th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. So we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here for this Tuesday broadcast. Not our regular Tuesday meeting show. We had to change things up a little bit coming out of the holiday weekend, but we do have a full hour with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. We'll do our college football first look. Then we'll transition over to our handicapping the hardwood college basketball segment. Of course, conference play beginning for a lot of teams here this week and next week. So plenty of things to talk about on the college basketball side, but we've got college football to begin today's show. A couple things I want to mention here before we get into things with Kyle Hunter. Make sure you're heading on over to bangthebook.com. We've got previews on all of the college football bowl games. I've got my situational betting articles for the NHL and the NBA, sportsbook reviews, so much stuff going on over there. You know, you're trying to play a little bit of catch up here coming out of the holidays. You got the start of 2017 coming up, so people are planning their New Year's festivities. So don't get too far behind. Make sure that you're taking advantage of all of the resources that we have over there at bangthebook.com. And, of course, that also includes Bang the Book Radio here with all the great guests that we bring on the airwaves. So that will go ahead and bring in one of those great guests. That is Mr. Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, my friend?
Going good, man. Had a really good Christmas, and nice to be able to spend some time with family. And it's always a lot better when you've got a three-year-old who's really pumped about it. So definitely a good Christmas, and looking to get back into the talking football and basketball here today.
Well, before we get into that, I want to ask you this. You know, you've been a professional handicapper for a long time. You've been around this industry. You've been following these types of things, and sometimes you get these time periods where you get behind, whether it's a holiday, whether you have maybe some unexpected travel, or even, you know, something more commonplace. You just get sick. You don't feel like doing anything. You're just kind of sitting around or staying in bed, whatever the case may be. What's your starting point in terms of catching up on what you've missed?
Well, I like to look and see what kind of injuries I've missed, updates that might change the status of the game. The other thing I try to do is when I'm coming back from a period where I'm not as much as normal, I like to try to pass on more games than I normally would. No need to play hero when you're trying to, just jump right back into things. So those are my biggest suggestions for people who are doing that themselves. For me, you know, the last 3 days is the least I've worked here in quite a while. You know, I'd been putting in 14-hour days just about every day for a long time. It feels a little bit odd to take some time off, but it's one of those times where I kind of draw a little bit of a line in the sand when it's Christmas. I want to be able to spend that time with family. So trying to give myself a crash course in what's been going on here the last few days. And it's going to be good to talk about it here, but, you know, like I said, what I try to do is not to try to jump out there and make a lot of big moves right away. Now these bowl games, I'd already handicapped these before I had a little bit of a break here. College basketball is a little bit more pertinent, you know, no need to jump back in and be betting a bunch of games right as you start back up.
Well, I think the nice thing is at least, and I know you were traveling yesterday, but for the most part, you know, there's not a whole lot going on here on Monday and Tuesday coming out of the Christmas holiday, but then we've got a massive slate on Wednesday, including some pretty big games. So you do have to be ready to go for that. But as far as catching up on injuries, do you have resources that you look for? Or are you just sort of looking at lines and you notice a line that looks really off to you, then you start to dig a little bit deeper because you figure there's something more to it?
Well, actually, that's where I start, is I look at lines to see what kind of line moves there's been, especially on these bowl games. You know, what kind of line moves has there been, and then I try to research why that line moved. I think that's a great place to start. And then after that, I looked at, you know, I looked at different injury reports like DonBest.com, places like that. You know, I think that looking at lines helps you save some time, though, you know, especially when it comes to the bowl games, because if the line hasn't gone anywhere, there probably hasn't been any really big news. And, you know, you can tell a lot just by what's happened to a line. So, yeah, I think that's a great place to start. And, you know, once I start handicapping a game and I'm deciding whether I'm going to pull the trigger on a game, then I'll look at it a little bit more deep.
Well, let's look at some of these college football bowl games here. I think the best thing to do, and we obviously have a lot of these games to get to here, I'm just going to sort of bounce around, pick and choose a little bit. I think it's in our best interest to hit the Wednesday games on the Thursday games for our listeners, because we haven't talked a whole lot about those, and we'll sort of bounce around a little bit for Friday and Saturday, and of course cover two semifinal games on Saturday. But let's start with this New Era Pinstripe Bowl between Northwestern and Pitt. We talked a little bit about this game with Brad Powers last week. Want to get your opinion on this one as well, because we have seen a little bit of line movement. Now, it's been a pretty modest line move up from 4 to 4.5 or 5 on the Pitt side. But how are you looking at this one in one of the few cold weather bowls that we have?
Yeah, this is a really tricky one because, you know, I'd like to look to play an under in a game like this, because this is one of the spots where weather could play a little bit of a role. You know, looking at the current forecast for this one, it looks like about mid-40s, about 10-mile-per-hour winds. So nothing really big here, no precipitation. Having said that, you know, I knew that this was a cold weather potential game, and it could be a little bit of weather. But when you look at the Pitt defense, this Pitt team has just been an automatic over team throughout the course of the year. I'm not going to play the over in this game. I don't want to play the under either, though. I can't believe Pitt's pass defense is as bad as they are. You know, it's hard to believe that a guy like Narduzzi, his pass defense could be that bad. On the other side, when you handicap this game, you have to really try to decide, can Northwestern take advantage of that weakness? You know, I think Thorson's done decent in some of his games this year, but he's not very consistent. So this is a big question mark to me. You know, I'd like to grab the points when you see points like this in a spot. But, you know, it's really kind of tricky at the same time, because I don't know that Northwestern's really that good of a team. And overall, I think Northwestern's been inconsistent throughout the course of the season. So, you know, you never know whether you're going to get that Northwestern team that almost beat Ohio State in Columbus, or one of the Northwestern teams that lost to Illinois State. So, to me, this is a good game to pass on. I don't have any strong opinion. My line here was 4.5, so I think this one's pretty fair.
Well, do you have a stronger opinion on the Russell Athletic Bowl down in Orlando between West Virginia and Miami?
I have a play on the total in this one, so I'm not going to talk about the total too much. But I like Miami some in this game. I think that West Virginia is a team that's done it a little bit with smoke and mirrors. And I know it's hard to say that completely with as good of a record as they have. But I don't think West Virginia is really a great team. I think Miami has a really good defense. I think this is one of the better defenses that West Virginia has seen. I don't like the Big 12 in general. So my lean here is Miami minus points in this game.
Well, one of the things I talked about last week with a couple of our guests with regards to this game is that, you know, Brad Kaya hasn't been healthy all year. And now with this additional layoff, I think we actually get to see, you know, maybe the ceiling of this Miami team, and maybe, you know, something that we can build on going into next year as well, because we know Mark Richt has talent to work with.
Absolutely. I mean, this Miami team, I feel like they've really rounded into form here pretty well. I know that they were a little bit inconsistent throughout the course of the season, but I think Mark Richt's done a pretty good job here in his first year, especially when you consider what you just said there. Brad Kaya really has not been very healthy, and Kaya is a very good quarterback when he is healthy. He's going to be one of the better quarterbacks West Virginia has played against, and certainly going to be one of the best defenses they've been up against. So, yeah, my lean is definitely to lay the points in this game. The betting action on this one, 56% of the bets on West Virginia and 56% of the money on West Virginia. So kind of hard to get too much of a read from the money on this one, but I think this line is going to probably stay about the same.
Well, the betting market never sleeps, and we found that out with some Christmas Day line movement and then a little bit of line movement yesterday on this Foster Farms Bowl between Indiana and Utah. And Kyle Whittingham, probably second to Urban Meyer in terms of how well he's done in bowl games. Of course, you know, obviously Nick Saban's done pretty well himself. But Kyle Whittingham does a phenomenal job here when he's got extra time to prep. But we're seeing what's very clearly sharp money coming in on Indiana for this one.
Yeah, absolutely. 61% of the bets in this game on Utah, but 62% of the money on Indiana. So that tells you all you need to know in that one. It looks like a public sharp split. I have to say, this one confuses me a little bit. You know, I get why Indiana would get the money at more than 7 points. I don't really understand why you'd want to bet on Indiana too much at 6 or 5.5 points. Kyle Whittingham's just done so well in the bowl games that if it's getting down to 6, 5.5 points, My slight lean here is Utah. I think Utah, you know, the Pac-12 is a little bit of an underrated conference. Certainly the Big Ten, a good conference. Indiana, it's hard to quantify exactly how much it means that Kevin Wilson's not there. Certainly it helps that somebody's there that's been there all along. I think Indiana's the biggest place where they've improved this year is defense. I really can't believe that this defense has been as good as they were this season, but Indiana really limited big plays a lot better than they have in the past. Another interesting note about this where the money is, only 29% of the bets on the under so far, but 83% of the money on the under. So some sharp money liking the under in this one as well. I think that makes some sense also. But at this price, you know, I can't go against Kyle Whittingham.
Yeah, I wonder if that's kind of a correlated move in terms of sharp players liking the under. And then obviously if you're going to get an under here in this game, which is what the expectation seems to be, you know, then you'd want to take the points. And I wonder maybe if, you know, because Kevin Wilson really did a lot offensively in terms of play calling and play design and things like that for Indiana. I wonder if maybe the expectation here in this game, and when we try to look for tempo changes, you know, when we can throughout college football and especially in college basketball, I wonder if the thought process here is that Indiana is going to really slow this game down on offense because, you know, they have a little bit of a transition there in terms of that side of the ball.
Yeah, it's possible, and I think the correlation is definitely true. Another thing to point out about Indiana is their red zone offense this year. Their red zone offense is terrible. They've turned it over a ton in the red zone. They've moved the ball a lot throughout the course of the season and not been able to score very many points. So that certainly helps an under when you throw interceptions in the end zone, things like that, touchbacks. It's going to help the under quite a bit. Utah's running game, pretty good. The passing game, not very consistent. I think the under makes some sense here, and my lean here, I'll take Utah minus the points as a small lean, and I'll also take the under as a small lean.
Nothing against Texas A&M and Kansas State fans, but I think we're going to bypass the Texas Bowl here. Unless you've got a strong opinion on it, we can certainly circle back to it. Let's go to the Birmingham Bowl here between South Florida and South Carolina. South Carolina, an SEC team, getting double digits against a Group of Five team, albeit a very good one in South Florida. But for the Bulls here, a little bit of a tumultuous bowl prep period with Willie Taggart taking the job at Oregon.
Yeah, that one changes this one a little bit for me. You know, at minus 10 or so, minus 10 and a half, 11, I would have leaned South Florida if he was still there. At this point, no real lean for me. I will say that the money is pretty interesting in this one. 61% of the bets so far on South Carolina and 82% of the money on South Carolina. So it seems like some of the sharps do like South Carolina in this game. Also, 56% of the bets on the under and 95% of the money on the under. That one really interests me a lot. I think people are thinking that South Carolina is going to be able to slow this game down. South Carolina's defense certainly better than a lot of defenses that South Florida has faced throughout the course of the season. Having said that, I do think South Carolina can score some points on South Florida. The South Florida defense is really bad. I think Bentley's a really good-looking quarterback for South Carolina. He's going to end up being a very good player. And South Florida's offense, I mean, at quarterback and running back, they have a tremendous tandem there, Flowers and Mack. I think Flowers is a really, really underrated quarterback, kind of a Lamar Jackson light version for him. And, you know, I don't really like the under a lot here, so looks like the sharp money so far does like the under. I don't know if I like that one very much. As far as the side, I just can't take South Florida laying the points after Taggart's left. On the other hand, you know, 61% of the bets on South Carolina. I don't really like taking public underdogs this time of the year. I don't think that's going to make you too much money in the long run.
Well, move to the Belk Bowl here between Arkansas and Virginia Tech, and we've got another SEC team here catching a pretty decent number. Arkansas is catching 7 against Virginia Tech. And, you know, so far the SEC has really had some problems. Vanderbilt didn't look very good. Mississippi State looked abominable against Miami of Ohio. That's a game that they probably shouldn't have won, but they were able to pull out the victory and never came at all close to covering. I mean, the spread was 14.5, and they scored 17 points, so they didn't come anywhere close. Do you feel like that may influence some of the betting action here in this game as we get closer to kickoff?
It's possible. You know, I think that at 7 points, or if it gets more than that, I have to like Arkansas some in this game. I think Arkansas is going to be able to run the ball some. Arkansas's passing game certainly better than it's been in the past. And Virginia Tech, you know, this is a solid defense, a pretty good offense there for Virginia Tech. You know, you have to be impressed with what they did this year with Justin Fuente. I think they're on the right path, certainly. And he was definitely a good hire. On the other hand, you know, I do think Arkansas is getting a little bit disrespected by this line. I think that, you know, Arkansas is a decent team who had some really bad losses. You know, you remember that game where they lost to Auburn the way they did. And I think that really hurt their perception in the market. You know, when you lose as bad as they did against Auburn in a big game like that, I think people remember that for a long time. But, you know, if they're catching a touchdown, I'm going to lean Arkansas in this game. We'll see what happens. It looks like most of the money is on Arkansas, 63% of the bets on Arkansas, 77% of the money on Arkansas. So not a game I love. I'll lean toward Arkansas. The other thing I kind of like in this game is the over. Arkansas's run defense is just terrible. I believe Arkansas's second worst in yards per carry allowed, and Cal's worst. So, you know, Cal has a really bad run defense. So Arkansas's been giving up a bunch of yards on the ground. I think Arkansas is going to be able to score as well. So I kind of like this game over the total.
How do you feel about the coaching matchup here with our old buddy Burt going up against Fuente? Any edge there?
You know, I think Fuente is a little bit better coach. Bielema's not a terrible coach. I don't really like him that much. But, you know, I haven't really looked at the numbers to see how Bielema's done in the bowls in the past. That'd certainly be something interesting to look at. You know, Fuente is in a new situation, playing against better teams than he's normally played against in bowl games. So, you know, probably not a big advantage for anybody in this one.
Well, we'll have to see what happens here on Thursday with a couple of games that have pretty big lines, and, you know, that may lead to a slow afternoon, but things really pick up at night. The Alamo Bowl between Oklahoma State and Colorado. This may be, outside of, you know, the Ohio State-Clemson game, this may be my favorite bowl game of the season because you've got two teams here with good quarterbacks, the chance to put up points, but at the same time, these are two pretty underrated defenses, particularly that Colorado secondary, which is one of the best in the nation. And you've got Colorado here lined as a 3-point favorite in the Alamo Dome. So, man, this could be a really fun one.
Yeah, I like Colorado in this game. I think that Colorado is being disrespected a little bit based on the fact that they just got blown out by Washington in that last game. You know, people remember what they last saw. Colorado had a really good season. They certainly didn't play well in that last game. And also they had some quarterback injuries in that game also against Washington. And let's just be honest, Washington's a really good team. So not a too big of a shocker that they lost that game by a decent amount. On the other side, like I said before, I'm not very high on the Big 12 right now. It looks like most people like Oklahoma State at this point, 58% of the bets, 62% of the money on Oklahoma State. I like Colorado here. I see the line is 3. There were some 2.5s. You know, I certainly would like to grab a 2.5 if possible. I don't know where this line's going to go. Possible it could go down to 2.5 again. You know, Colorado's defense is just so much better than Oklahoma State's. Colorado 8th in the country in yards per play so far this season. Really, really impressive. And like you said, that secondary is just tremendous. I really, really have been impressed with them throughout the course of the season. And even though they lost by a lot to Washington, I mean, if you watch that game, they really gave Jake Browning a lot of trouble. And Chris Peterson talked about that after the game, that Colorado's secondary is just elite.
The only question I'll ask you about here, defensive coordinator Jim Leavitt left for Oregon, reunited with Willie Taggart. Is that enough of a concern to push you off of Colorado there? Or do you feel like, you know, since it's this late in the season, the assistant coaches that are taking over, and I don't know who the interim defensive coordinator is for this game, but do you feel like, you know, that things are just going to remain status quo, so there's not much to worry about?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I don't love the fact that he just left, but I do think that this defense has enough veteran leaders to where they're still going to be able to be good enough. And I think that this is so much better defense than what Oklahoma State's played against throughout the course of the season. I mean, you look at some of those Big 12 games throughout the course of the season, just ridiculous shootouts. You know, they didn't face much of a defense on the other side. It's going to be a big difference here. Like I said, Colorado 8th in the country in yards per play allowed, and Oklahoma State 88th in yards per play allowed. So a big difference there. I think Colorado is going to have success on offense. Both teams like to play quickly, so that's interesting as far as the total. You know, Colorado has not had a ton of really high-scoring games because their defense is so good, but they do like to play fast. Oklahoma State certainly likes to play fast as well. So I wouldn't be shocked to see a decent amount of points in this game, but certainly my favorite play in this one is Colorado minus the points.
Well, move to Friday here, and we'll introduce some new games that we really haven't talked about a whole lot here on the shows, and it's tough to pick and choose here as we go throughout, but it's what we're going to have to do. I want to touch on this Georgia and TCU game because both of these teams, you know, really have become Georgia has been for a while, but TCU has really come into national prominence here. They did it under Gary Patterson when they were in the Mountain West. Now they're in the Big 12. Just a 6-6 year, a pretty underwhelming season for them, but nowhere near as underwhelming as the year that Georgia had. They get rid of Mark Richt. They go with Kirby Smart, start out 3-0, and then all of a sudden they wind up this season at 7-5. This game is a pick 'em here in the Liberty Bowl in Memphis, Tennessee. To me, as I look at this game, I think this is one of the tougher handicaps of the bowl season.
Yeah, you know, I think TCU is one of the biggest disappointments of the season. You know, they were 13th in the preseason rankings, AP poll. So this is a TCU team that people thought was really going to be very good. They were just burning money all year long. There's no way I'd bet TCU in this game, no way. Do I like Georgia a lot? No, not really. You know, this is kind of one of those where I don't really want to back either team, but certainly like Georgia a little bit more than I like TCU at this point. You know, the thing about this game is it's a little bit hard to tell on motivation level who cares more about this game because, you know, you could look at it two ways. You could say that these teams were both disappointing. It's one final chance for them to pick up a nice win and kind of build some momentum into the next season. Or you could say, you know, both of these teams were disappointing and they'd rather just, you know, be done with this season and move on to next season. And you see it work out that way sometimes where a team just doesn't even show up. It's just like, hey, this is it. You know, let's just play out the string. So to me, this is a really tough one to take a side on. If I had to, I'd pick Georgia. I like the under a little bit in this game. 39% of the bets so far on the under and 76% of the money. So it looks like a sharp play here on the under. This one's a really hard one to take a side on.
It is, and I guess when you try to handicap motivation there, you're sort of looking at Gary Patterson against Kirby Smart, who's, of course, a first-year head coach. But at the same time, when you look at what's going on with TCU over the last couple of years, you know, Gary Patterson's bread and butter with this Horned Frogs team was its defense, and this defense has been atrocious over the last 2 years.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, TCU is a tough team to figure out right now. I certainly like Gary Patterson. He's certainly a good coach. And I have to think that you have to give him an edge as far as coaching. He's been in these bowl games before. Kirby Smart, you know, not as a head coach, hasn't been. So, you know, just coaching-wise, I give him a bit of an edge. But his team, I mean, look at the season finale they played against Kansas State at home. TCU looked like they had just given up on the season. So they're not a team I'd like to back here, but I'm not rushing to back Georgia either.
It's not going to happen, I don't think, so it's probably not even worth talking about. But do you feel like maybe Gary Patterson needs a change of scenery?
Yeah, that's hard to say. You know, I guess I'll give him another year to see what happens next year. Like you said, I don't think it's going to happen because, you know, TCU knows that they have a really good coach there and he's done so many good things for that program. I don't think they're going to run him out. It would just be a situation of him wanting to go somewhere else, and I assume he doesn't right now. But, you know, it is a little bit confusing to see where they're going right now because, you know, they weren't supposed to be this bad this year. You know, Hill was supposed to be a good fit there at quarterback. It didn't work out. The defense, like you said, has been a big disappointment. We'll see what happens next season. But Patterson's still a good coach, and I'm confused why they're not doing any better than they are.
We'll move to the Sun Bowl here between Stanford and North Carolina. A couple of feature backs missing from this game. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey, the biggest one, and you know, I talked about this. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I can't fault him because he's been such a high usage player at Stanford that, you know, I really don't blame him. And if this was the Rose Bowl or a semifinal game or something like that, I'm sure he would play, which, you know, you can make your own opinions up about that. But North Carolina is going to be without Elijah Hood. So this is Mitch Trubisky's big showing for his NFL draft stock. Won't have his top running back with him. But Are you surprised that we really haven't seen this number move around a whole lot? It's pretty much been sitting on 3 ever since the market settled.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. I'll just say, you know, I bet Stanford at -3 before I knew McCaffrey was going to be out. Certainly surprised that the line didn't move more than it did based on that information. Now, like you said, Hood out as well now matters, but, you know, there wasn't much of a response to that in the market either. I think the betting market just believes that this is a pretty good matchup for Stanford. I don't like it as much as I did when I thought McCaffrey was going to play. I do still like Stanford some here, though. I think Stanford's pass defense has really been good later in the season. They had some big injuries early in the year. If you look at Stanford throughout the course of the season, they got really good against the pass late in the season as their secondary started to get healthy. I think this is a pretty tough matchup for Trubisky, especially without his running back. So, and then on the other side, you know, I still think Stanford's going to be able to run the football here. They have some decent backups. They certainly have a good offensive line. There's no doubt about that. And the weakness of this North Carolina defense is the run defense. You know, they can stop the pass. They can't stop the run. Stanford's going to be running here, regardless of the fact that McCaffrey's not in there. And I think Stanford will still be able to run the football. Like I said, I don't love it now, but my lean is still Stanford.
You know, we've talked about this a little bit with various guests here on the show, you know, as we've gone throughout the bowl season. And there are some teams that you just can't practice for. You know, Central Michigan couldn't practice for Tulsa and the very, very fast tempo that they play. And Central Michigan got completely boat raced in that game. It was never really close. You talk about trying to prep for the triple option. You know, you can't really do that with your scout team. I mean, you can't nail all the intricacies and have your defensive players ready to fill all those gaps, ready to stop all the different looks that they're going to see. This is possibly one of those games because if you're North Carolina, it is impossible for you to simulate the physicality that Stanford brings to the table in the trenches.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they don't play teams who play the way Stanford does. I guess you could say, you know, a team like Florida State maybe tries to win with physicality. But Florida State doesn't have the same offensive line Stanford does, that's for sure. Stanford is a different team than what North Carolina is used to playing against, and Stanford's able to take advantage of the weakness that North Carolina has. That's why I still like Stanford some in this one. I like the under as well some here because I think that Stanford will take their time, have some really long drives. That's the tricky thing with a team like Stanford. Even when they score, they take their time doing so. When you use up 7, 8, 9 minutes of the clock on a scoring drive, especially if you get a field goal, that's really helpful for the under. So I like Stanford some here, and I like the under some as well.
I want to touch on the Music City Bowl here between Nebraska and Tennessee. You got Tennessee a 6.5-point favorite in this one. This has been one of the numbers that's been climbing throughout the bowl season. And I want to get your take on that because we've seen a couple of SEC teams really no-show already. And when you look at Tennessee, I mean, this was a team that people were talking about as somebody that could challenge Alabama for the SEC title game, somebody that could make it into the college football playoff, somebody that was absolutely going to win the SEC East. Well, none of those things happened. And now they're playing the Music City Bowl against a Nebraska team that, you know, sure they went 9-3, but no one really thinks of them as being an upper echelon type of team. I really wonder about Tennessee's motivation here. And of course, as we know, you know, Butch Jones has lost this team at various points throughout the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, is it true that Tommy Armstrong is not going to play in this game? Is that part of the reason the line moved?
I don't know. I haven't seen that. So maybe it is. I know Jordan Westerkamp's not going to play, which is pretty big for them. He suffered a torn meniscus. But Armstrong's been hurt all year, too. So.
Yeah, I'm looking at Don Bess here right as we're talking. It looks like he's been downgraded doubtful. So, you know, I think that's part of the reason the Lions move. But on the other hand, when you're looking at it, how good really is Tommy Armstrong? I actually like Tommy Armstrong, but I don't think that Tommy Armstrong is really that good of a quarterback. So I don't know that the drop-off is really that big. It looks like Riker Fife will probably start here in this game. He's had a wrist injury. He's listed as probable for this game. So I certainly think that probably has something to do with it, the fact that Westerkamp is definitely one of their best options there as a wide receiver. They don't really have a lot of great skill position players here at Nebraska. He's very good. Terrell Newby, probable. He has a little bit of a knee injury as well. So Nebraska's banged up. That's certainly part of the deal here. But having said that, you know, how do you want to lay this many points with Tennessee? I certainly don't. You know, if you want to bet Tennessee minus 6.5, go ahead. I'm not going to do it, that's for sure. If you want to push this line up over 7, then I'll take Nebraska. We'll see what happens here. But, you know, Mike Riley's been a good bowl coach in the past. I give him the coaching edge over Butch Jones just because, you know, I'm not high on Butch Jones at all. Every single year Tennessee is supposed to be extremely good under him, and every single year they disappoint. So, you know, I understand that Nebraska has injury issues. I understand that Nebraska is not a great team. You know, for quite a while they were overrated as far as their ranking in the polls, and we found that out in some of the big games they played against good teams. But, you know, like you said, what's Tennessee's motivation level in this game? There's no way I want to lay this many points to the team that I'm not sure is even motivated to play in this game.
One thing that'll really intrigue me about this game is the crowd factor. Obviously, Knoxville much closer to Nashville than Lincoln is, but if you're going to go to a bowl game and support your program, spending New Year's in Nashville is not a bad way to do it. For those who have never been to Nashville, it is a phenomenal time. It is great, great food, live music everywhere you go. You can't beat that. So I imagine Nebraska is going to be very well represented here in town. And that should make things very, very interesting in the Music City Bowl. One more game on December 30th to touch on. You knew we had to talk about this game. Michigan and Florida State in the Capital One Orange Bowl. Michigan's laying a full 7 now. Now the juice is kind of all over the place, but this is a pretty interesting line to me.
Yeah, real interesting. First of all, you know, the weather in this one looks a little bit interesting in 20-mile-per-hour winds. Now, this is in the Orange Bowl, and I think the wind matters a little bit less here than it does in most places. And having said that, you know, I think Michigan's a team that would be able to benefit from any kind of weather issues there would be, just because Michigan is so physical on the line of scrimmage. That would help them probably. On the other hand, when I look at this game, you know, I can't lay 7 points with Michigan here against a Florida State team that I think is really, really talented. You know, going into the season, I had Florida State overrated a little bit. You know, this is a team that I thought was capable of winning the national title. They certainly haven't been close to that, but Florida State is playing much, much better here at the end of the season. And Florida State, to me, they're going to be up for this game. You know, last year they weren't up for their bowl game, and that showed. I think both teams should be up for this game. I don't think motivation will be a problem when they're playing against another school of this stature. And also, you know, certainly this is a primetime game that everybody's going to be watching. So I think motivation is pretty equal on both sides. But, you know, catching 7 points, I have to lean Florida State in this one. The one concern I have here for Florida State's offensive line is certainly their weakness. There's no doubt about that. Michigan, I believe, is first in the country in tackles for a loss. So they could get quite a few tackles for a loss here against Florida State. Michigan's actually second in the country in tackles for a loss behind Arkansas State, but Arkansas State played one extra game. So Michigan, really good at tackles for a loss. I think they'll probably pick up quite a few of them in this game. Having said that, you know, Dalvin Cook's very capable of breaking some big plays. How is Francois going to play in this game? That's a question mark, too. I think Francois is a very good quarterback. He's going to be very good here for Florida State, but certainly concerning to have an inexperienced quarterback going against that good of a Michigan defense. I think Florida State's defense is certainly better than they looked early in the season. They played a lot better here of late. I think this line's high partially because of what Michigan did in their bowl game last year.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, too, because, you know, I mean, for Michigan here, coming off of that loss to Ohio State in a game that they feel like they won, given that JT Barrett got that, you know, that fourth down call in double overtime, you know, you could wonder about their ability to bounce back, but, you know, this has been a long time in between games. On the Florida State side, I thought that they really could have packed it in after that loss at home to Clemson. They went on the road to North Carolina State, had a tough time, only won by 4. But then after that, 45-7 to Boston College, 45-14 at the Carrier Dome, 31-13 over Florida. I give them a ton of credit for rallying, and I give Jimbo Fisher a lot of credit for rallying this team. So I definitely think you get the best from both teams in a premier game. You know, maybe the winner of this game is a top-5 team in the preseason polls next year. There's a lot of intrigue for this game, a lot of things to watch. And, You know, the thing that does concern me for Florida State, like you mentioned, is that Michigan gets in the backfield. They did it to Ohio State all game long. And, you know, Francois is a little bit less experienced than JT Barrett, to say the least. And, you know, what Barrett was able to do with his legs in that in the game, you know, their Thanksgiving weekend, that's what won it for Ohio State. If Francois can't do the same thing, that's going to be a problem for the Seminoles.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Francois is a pretty good runner, probably not as good as JT Barrett. The offensive line there is certainly the question mark. Now, Ohio State's offensive line is not very good either. So Michigan was able to take advantage of that. That's the concern if you bet Florida State in this spot is, you know, whether Florida State's offensive line is going to be able to hold up. I do say, you know, it has to be hard to lay 7 points with a team like Michigan. Their offense hasn't been very good here of late. No denying that Michigan has one of the best defenses in the country, though. So this is really an interesting game, though. It's certainly one I'm looking forward to watching.
It's going to be a very, very long day on December 31st for college football fans. 2:11 o'clock Eastern kickoffs, and then, of course, the two semifinal games that will take you almost into the new year. I want to touch on one of these 11 a.m. games. That's LSU and Louisville. LSU, 3-point favorite here in this one. Of course, they decide to make Ed Orgeron the full-time head coach. Louisville with Heisman Trophy winner Lamar Jackson. This isn't where these two teams wanted to be, playing in the Citrus Bowl. However, this is a matchup where both teams should get up based on the opponent.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with this game. I have to be honest. This may be the hardest one to handicap out of all for me. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to take a side in this game. I kind of like the under a little bit here, so that's certainly my strongest lean, just because the number's so high and neither team plays that fast. I think the defenses are good here. Louisville's defense is underrated, no doubt. You know, it's hard to know motivation level. I assume they'll get up for playing the other team, but, you know, Louisville was looking to be a playoff contender there for a long time, and they just totally fell off the map. Some people look at this as, hey, it's a chance for Louisville to prove, hey, we are a really good team, and this is one last chance for us to show that that was no fluke how we were playing early in the season. You know, LSU, I think Orgeron can get him up for a game like this. I think that's one of his strengths. You know, certainly it hurts to not have Fournette, but LSU has plenty of good running backs. There's no shortage of depth there. So I think LSU will be able to run the ball some. Though Louisville is a top five run defense, you know, can LSU pass enough to beat them? I don't know. I guess my lean here slightly on the side would be Louisville. 46% of the bets only on Louisville so far and 58% of the money. So it looks like the sharp side so far is Louisville. But this is a really tough side to take.
Well, we'll cover the college football playoff semifinal games here. Washington and Alabama, Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl in the Georgia Dome. Alabama's a 2-touchdown favorite here in this one. We've got media day going on as we're recording the show here. So you can take what you want out of the quotes when you sort of pour through the transcripts of those after today's show. But, you know, as far as this game is concerned, I mean, look, Alabama's the better team. Alabama's the better team in the trenches. Nick Saban doesn't have as much of a coaching advantage as he usually would because Chris Peterson's on the other sideline and Washington's had a lot of prep time for this game. But that being said, I mean, this Alabama team has just blown out basically everybody they've played this year, except for LSU, who they beat 10-0 and played a phenomenal defensive game. How does Washington keep this thing close?
It's going to be hard, there's no doubt. This is a tough game for me because when this one was up around 17, and I started looking at it and thought, hey, should I take Washington in this one? I handicapped the game more. I just can't do it. I'm not going to lay the points here with Alabama. My number was 13 in this one. So I think it's, you know, slightly high at this point. But I have to say, if you like Alabama, you want to go ahead and take that minus 14 now, because there's one thing I'm confident in. It's going to be higher than minus 14 when this one closes. So definitely the money's going to be on Alabama in this one. It's gone down to 14 at this point. It's going back up. So if you like Alabama, go ahead and take it now. If you like Washington, wait till closer to the game. That I'm confident of. As far as the side, you know, it's just really tricky to go against Alabama here. You know, they have so many advantages in this game. Like you say, not really a big coaching advantage like you normally have for Alabama. Really like Chris Peterson. He's tremendous. I do wonder about Jake Browning in this game, though. You know, Browning was really good throughout the course of the season. And then he did not play well at all against Colorado. This Alabama defense is going to be in the backfield in this game. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So how much confidence does Browning have? You know, he has to play a lot better for Washington to have a chance in this game. I really think, you know, this line's pretty solid at this point, and I wouldn't want to take a side. You know, it's one of those spots where you like to try to find value on the underdog when you're in a playoff, four-team playoff, and you think a team is one of the four best teams in the country, and they're catching two touchdowns or more. You want to take it. But this Alabama team's just broken all the rules as far as trying to go against them with the sharp money. I just can't do it.
One more game to talk about here, and then a listener question that will tie all of this together. Ohio State and Clemson, the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl. Buckeyes laying 3 or 3.5, depending on where you look out there in the marketplace. And this is another one. I love Urban Meyer. Obviously, Urban Meyer's bowl record speaks for itself. But Dabo Swinney is a pretty legit head coach. I used to wonder about him because he was a great recruiter, and I wasn't sure about how he was from an in-game standpoint. But he's really made a believer out of me, and it sucks to say that as a South Carolina fan. But great defensive coordinator here in Brent Venables. You know, the offense hasn't missed a beat with Chad Morris at SMU. This is the hallmark game of the bowl season as far as I'm concerned. I think this one should be an instant classic, should be close throughout. But from a line standpoint here, the Buckeyes 3-point favorite with extra chalk or extra juice or a 3.5-point favorite. I know that you don't bet against the Buckeyes, but where do you see the line value here in this one?
Yeah, if I were betting this game, I would bet against the Buckeyes. I'm not going to do it. I think that Ohio State should be favored by about a point in this game. You know, Ohio State has a major weakness on the offensive line. My big concern here in this one is Clemson can definitely take advantage of that weakness. Clemson, as far as sacks this year, third in the country, 46 sacks. And the team is first, Boston College, is 47 in one extra game. So, I know actually they both played 13 games. I didn't realize. Clemson's played 13 games already. So, 46 sacks, though. 3.54 sacks per game for Clemson. So certainly Clemson has been really, really good getting to the quarterback this year. JT Barrett holds the ball a little bit too long. You know, I like JT Barrett, and I think he catches a little bit too much criticism from Buckeye fans. The offensive line's not good, and Barrett's been a little indecisive this year. There's been some times where he needs to run it sooner than he does, sometimes that he needs to just get rid of the ball. I think that's going to hurt them quite a bit in this game. You know, as a Buckeyes fan, I'm certainly concerned about this game. Now, I don't think there's any doubt that Urban Meyer has a coaching advantage. Sweeney's a good coach, a very good coach. I think Urban Meyer's an excellent coach. The Buckeyes have the coaching advantage in this one. But when you go just looking at it position by position, you know, this is a tough matchup for the Buckeyes. And Deshaun Watson, you know, the question mark here is Deshaun Watson, can he take care of the football? Because Ohio State has a secondary that definitely is, you know, ball-hawking secondary. They have some really, really good players in that secondary. They're going to be good NFL players in the future. I think that's where Ohio State needs to make some plays if they're going to win this game. They're going to have to force some turnovers because I expect Ohio State's offense to have some trouble against this Clemson defensive line. I think this total was a little bit too high. I see it's come down some. You know, certainly I think the most line value here, though, is taking Clemson. I'm not going to do it as a Buckeyes fan, but, you know, as a Buckeyes fan, I'm concerned about this game.
I think the silver lining for us as Buckeye fans and for people that love to watch the best players in the country is that when you look at what happened in that Michigan game and how Ohio State had so many problems up front, you know, Mike Weber couldn't find a ton of holes. JT Barrett had to scramble for his life. It was the type of game where you needed to use Curtis Samuel more. And I'm really hoping that that was the lesson that they learned because Clemson could do the exact same thing at the line of scrimmage. So you want to get it out quickly, get it to Curtis Samuel, let him make some plays out there in space. And hopefully that's the adjustment that they make. I mean, it sort of felt to me like, I mean, Samuel's not built like Ezekiel Elliott, obviously. So it felt to me like they were sort of limiting his touches in the event that they got to a position like this.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, they didn't use him enough throughout the course of the season, especially in big spots. He better be used a lot in this game. He's by far their best playmaker. I mean, it's not even – and Clemson hasn't faced too many guys that are as good of playmakers as him, but You know, you worry about Ohio State's offensive line a lot here. Those tackles are really bad. I think Clemson could beat them around the edge quite a bit in this game. You know, Ohio State certainly has a really good defense. There's no doubt about that. Ohio State's offense, they're solid. Clemson has the better offense, no doubt. You know, turnover margin is going to be a really big key in this game. I think whoever wins the turnover battle probably wins this game. And I know that's a little bit of a cop-out because you could probably say that almost every game. But I think it matters a lot here.
One more point about this game, just to throw out to our listeners. I'm not going to get on a soapbox or anything, but you know, if you are going out to watch this game or you are going out for New Year's, designate a driver, take Uber, take Lyft, take a cab, whatever the case may be. Be safe. Don't kill yourself or somebody else by driving drunk. You know, I know for me, I'm just going to stay in and watch this game. I'm not even going to deal with amateur hour out there. But, you know, for those that do go out, make sure that you are safe and responsible about it. One more thing here. We had a question from one of our listeners, Umpire Tony, who listens all the time, and he sent me this question last week. I want to get your thoughts here on this. He's got Alabama at plus 235 to win the national championship and also Ohio State at plus 275. So he was wondering what he should do in terms of these two semifinal games. He noted that he thinks taking Washington on the money line is probably a waste, which, I mean, anything could happen, but, you know, that is kind of a tough sell. So Alabama plus 235, Ohio State plus 275. What's the play in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, if it were me, I wouldn't take Washington. I would take Clemson. So I think you just have to take Clemson there. That's the way you hedge that one. Depending on how much you have on each bet would depend on how much you should hedge there, obviously. I certainly think Alabama is a big favorite to win it all this year, no doubt. So certainly I like having both of those bets there. And with Urban Meyer, you know, you never know about Ohio State. I really don't think they're going to win at all, but it certainly helps having a guy like Urban Meyer there. Having said that, yeah, I mean, I think you just have to take Clemson, and that's what I'd do there.
Yeah, and I mean, if you take Clemson, at least you're getting something out of it. If somehow Washington does win, you know, and then Clemson beats Ohio State, Clemson would be a pretty significant favorite over Washington as well. Probably get a bump from that Ohio State game, too. So, you know, that would have to be the way that you would approach that. But to Umpire Tony, thank you so much for the question. We'll transition over to the college basketball side here for our Handicapping the Hardwood segment. But before we do that, make sure that you're heading on over to DSI Sportsbook. Lots of stuff going on here this time of the year. College basketball conference play getting fired up. And we've talked about it already with various guests here on the show. You want to be able to shop around for those best futures prices in the college basketball betting landscape. So having another out like DSI at your disposal, use that BTB radio promo code that'll get you a $10 free bet for signing up, an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. And, you know, they're very good to us. They offer two great promo codes for us. The other one, the Bang 200 promo code with 100% for the sportsbook and 100% for the live casino. So use whichever one works for you. But again, make sure that you aren't limiting yourself and limiting your ability to turn a profit, you know, by not having more than one sportsbook at your disposal. So Kyle, we'll flip over to college basketball here. And as I talked about already, conference play starting up this week for a lot of teams. There's several games in the Big Ten here on Tuesday night, actually. Another game in the AAC between SMU and Memphis. What's different about conference play as opposed to the non-conference part of the season?
Yeah, definitely want to talk about this. I think that slower tempo should be noted. We're definitely going to have games played at a slower pace. I think there's going to be less fouls. The officials are definitely the most whistle-happy early in the season. As you get to this point in the year, there's less fouls. The game slows down. I do think the odds makers adjust as far as totals. I think it's going to be lower scoring games, but the under has been hitting at a pretty good rate throughout the course of the season, so I don't know that I'd like to just blindly bet unders either. The thing that I like the most here as far as value right now is home underdogs. I think home underdogs catching a lot of points could have quite a bit of value now. If you look at how they've done so far this year, home underdogs have done terribly, 44.44% against the spread. For home underdogs so far this year, I guarantee you that one's going to go up. So I think that, you know, these road favorites are going to be really tricky to back right now. If you can catch a good team at home, catching some points, especially if they have a good home court advantage, I think you can find a lot of value there right now because there's been some teams going on the road, picking up some really big wins, you know, winning big over inferior competition. Now they play against teams who are more like them in competition. You know, you don't go out of the conference and play against a really weak team from another conference. Now you're playing against somebody from your own conference, for most teams at least. So I think that home underdogs is a really good way to look.
Any other dramatic differences? I mean, obviously, like you said, the talent gaps are a little bit smaller. There's a lot more familiarity between these teams. You know, other than that, I mean, I guess this is sort of more of a long-term question to look ahead to, but in conference play, a lot of these teams play each other twice. So in terms of looking at that second matchup, and obviously that's generally, you know, 6-7 weeks down the road, what types of notes are you leaving for yourself in terms of looking ahead to that rematch?
Yeah, I like to see what kind of style of play there is in the first game. I like to go in depth to look at the box score, you know, track how the tempo was in the first game. You know, why did that team win in the first game? What kind of quick revenge? I like quick revenge spots. Sometimes you get these spots where a team will play against someone and then they'll play a couple weeks later. It doesn't happen too often, more often in the smaller conferences than it does in the big conferences. But, you know, sometimes quick revenge can be a good angle to play, especially if one team just shot the lights out in the first game and they're not likely to do that again. You know, in general, in conference play, like I said, there's going to be less fouls. The officials are going to let more go. Every single year at the beginning of the season, people are like, wow, there's just so many fouls here early in the year. It's going to be amazing to see what happens. And then just gradually throughout the course of the season, there's less fouls. Now, obviously, you're still going to have some games where there are a bunch of fouls. And if there's two teams that are extremely physical, sometimes the officials have to get a hold of the game. But I think that that's something that you should look to see trending that way even more, is less fouls, slower pace. I like the home underdogs. And see what happens in that first game. See if there's a kind of a fluke winner. That's where you like to try to make a note and look for the spot coming ahead. Is say a team that doesn't shoot well at all on threes, shoots 50% or better on threes in that first game, it's a good team to look to try to go against in that second game.
Well, of course, we can do a little bit more of this as we get solely into college basketball in our segments with Kyle, because, you know, next week on our Monday show, we'll really only have the national championship and then maybe a couple of the late games on Monday night to talk about. But, you know, we talked about home court advantage. We talked about it in the Sun Belt already. Also looked a little bit at some of the other conferences here. We're going to look at a couple of big conferences and look at some home court advantages in these two leagues, beginning with the Big Ten. Now, of course, people are automatically going to assume that there are really good home court advantages in the Big Ten because you've got big buildings, loud fan bases, teams that are usually pretty good, so people care about the basketball programs. What's your starting point here for the Big Ten in this discussion?
Well, first of all, you know, these big conferences, the home court advantage is actually smaller than it is in the smaller conferences. And that's something that most people don't understand. That's something I really want to drive home throughout the course of the season here. You know, people always talk about places like Duke. I know we're not talking about the ACC right now. If you look at Duke, they actually have a little bit less than average home court advantage if you look at the data long term. Why is that? Well, these other teams are used to playing in these big venues against schools that have a bunch of people in the stands who are really loud. So, you know, it's different when you go to a smaller place and the fans are right on top of you. And, you know, there's only 1,500 seats. It's just unique. There can be some really tough shooting backdrops in the smaller conferences. Usually in these big conferences, things are pretty across the board pretty similar. So the edges aren't quite as big. Now, at the Big Ten, I want to say four teams that I think have a better-than-average home court advantage. First is Indiana. Indiana has 4.5 points in my book. Indiana, first of all, the first thing I should say is everybody in Indiana, any school in Indiana has a good home court advantage. That's because Indiana fans are crazy about basketball. They love basketball in the state of Indiana. I think the fans here are far more loyal, are going to show up regardless of how good the team is, going to pack the place out much better than in the average state. Indiana, Bloomington, this is a little bit off the beaten path. I mean, it's not exactly in you know, your big city like some of the other places are in Big Ten. So I think that helps them as well. The travel is a little bit more difficult to Bloomington than it is to some of the others. I think between that and the fact that they have some really, really good fans, I think that's the biggest reason for Indiana being so good at home.
What's next on your list?
Next on my list, and this is 4 points. I'm going to give three teams here 4 points. Purdue is first. West Lafayette, it's a unique place to play. I would say West Lafayette would also fit into that category of kind of being out in the middle of nowhere. You know, it's between Indianapolis and Chicago up, I believe it's I-65. So Purdue has a really good home court advantage. Michigan State, I mean, everybody would have known Michigan State had to be there. The Izzone, it's just a great place to play. Those fans are really, really wild. Michigan State definitely plays well at home. The other one, Iowa. I don't think Iowa would be one that most people would expect, but Iowa's pretty far away from some other teams in the Big Ten. That certainly helps them a lot. Iowa's been a good home team over the years, so I give Iowa 4 points as well.
And I think another thing that helps with those teams that we talked about, I mean, obviously Michigan State's been pretty decent in college football here lately, and so has Iowa, but, you know, more so over the last 10 to 15 years, you look at the Ohio States and the Michigans of the world, you know, Wisconsin's been playing for Big Ten titles. You know, there's a lot more on the football side than there is on the basketball side at some of these schools. But the four that you mentioned, you know, Purdue hasn't been all that great at football since Drew Brees left. Indiana hasn't been good for a long time. You know, Iowa under Kirk Ferentz, there's been all the jokes about him, you know, being basically a 500 coach. So I think that kind of ties into it as well. When you get a major conference program where one sport is a lot better than the other, you can definitely see some more of an advantage there.
Yeah, absolutely. Ohio State's a place where, you know, Ohio State's a football school first always. It's a little bit tough for them to pack out the place in basketball and have a really crazy environment. Not hard for them to do it at all in football. So, yeah, that's certainly a good point as well. One that I would say that has a poorer home court advantage than the rest is Northwestern. Now, this is a smaller gym than others, and I think it has the potential to be a better home court advantage in the future. And I'm kind of keeping my eye on Northwestern this year. First of all, I give them 2 points for a home court advantage. So I think that this is one that may need to be adjusted up as Chris Collins continues to build this program. Northwestern is better now. I think they have at least a chance to make the NCAA tournament. I'm certainly rooting for them. I hate that they've never made it. It seems like every year people are like, oh, this might be the year, and then it never happens. They certainly have a chance this year. They started 11-2. I think the fan base will be a little bit more excited about Northwestern here, so that could certainly help their home court advantage going forward. But there's not been a lot of reasons for fans to be too invested in this Northwestern basketball program, and I think that's hurt their home court advantage quite a bit.
Well, for the other major conference here to talk about home court advantage, we're going to look at the Pac-12, and I'm just going to go out on a limb, and I'm not sure. I mean, you may have to correct me here, but I'm going to guess that Colorado and Utah have a little bit of an above-average home court advantage in this conference.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. Definitely the biggest home court advantages in the Pac-12 are Utah and Colorado. I give each of them 5 points for a home court advantage. That's a lot for a big conference. That's definitely a lot. Elevation's a big, big deal here. The other thing you have to watch is a lot of teams get these really, really tough scheduling spots where they play Utah and then Colorado on the road. Those are really, really good spots to fade the team that's playing their second game in Elevation. I think, you know, more teams have to do that than they probably should, but I know the reason they do that is Utah and Colorado aren't really that far apart. So, you know, UCLA or USC, something like that, will take a trip to Utah and then go to Colorado in the second game. Definitely like back in Colorado, the home team in the sec. When you're fading a team who's in the second game at Elevation, 5 points, really, really good home court advantage for those two teams. They both have good fan bases as well and, you know, good coaching staffs. I think that both of these teams will continue to be pretty good here in the future. The other one that I give a better-than-average home court advantage for, 4.5 points, is Stanford. And I have to say, the reason here is Maples Pavilion's a lot different gym than the rest of them in the Pac-12. Much, much smaller. Fans are kind of on top of things right there. Stanford's fans are very good, and Maples Pavilion is a very different building than the rest. I think it's a big advantage for them that it's not kind of, you know, a cookie-cutter arena where it's just the same as where everybody else is playing.
Another thing to keep in mind about the Pac-12, and this is something that I'm sure we'll talk about, and you already mentioned the situational spot with Colorado and Utah, is that the conference schedule makers do group these things together. You'll play USC and UCLA back-to-back, Arizona and Arizona State, Oregon and Oregon State. You know, so not only do you have some of these spots where, you know, you're playing these back-to-back road games in relatively the same area. I mean, some of these campuses are still pretty far apart, but also that tends to create some letdown spots and some look-ahead spots, because if you're going down to play Arizona and you play in Tempe against the Sun Devils first, you know, which game are you going to be more focused on? Or Washington and Washington State? You know, if Washington ever puts it all together with all their talent, Pullman and Seattle are, you know, two very different places to get to, two very different types of campuses. And, you know, it's just, I mean, again, you're talking about college kids here, so you got to keep that stuff in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. There can be some really good look-ahead spots. So that's something to keep an eye on as you go throughout the course of the season. The Pac-12, you're going to see more of those with the two places together, especially when it comes to the elevation games, than you're going to get in a lot of the other conferences. The one that I would say has a lower home court advantage than the rest here, USC, I give them 2.5 points for home court advantage. USC is really good this year, obviously, so far, and they haven't played a good schedule, and I just certainly don't think they're as good as their 13-0 record. But USC, not a great home court advantage, so that's something to keep in mind going forward.
Well, there are three games that you wanted to touch on here for this week. We'll dig a little bit deep on the first two here. We'll start the Missouri Valley Conference with Thursday night's matchup between Evansville and Illinois State. Evansville off to a little bit of a slow start this year. They were 2-4 out of the gate, but they've rattled off, what, 7 straight wins now? And then on the other side, you've got Illinois State, who just played out in Hawaii not that long ago. They're hosting this one at Redbird Arena. And I'm kind of wondering, maybe this is one of those games that's sort of a carryover from what we just talked about in terms of home court advantage.
Yeah, you know, this is a one that I wanted to talk about, because Illinois State usually would be in a spot where I'd like to play them here if they hadn't just traveled to Hawaii, because Evansville, I don't think, is very good on the road. I think Evansville has a tremendous home court advantage. So does Illinois State. Some really, really good home court advantages here in the Missouri Valley Conference. I will certainly need to talk about that one here pretty soon. There's really not many bad home court advantages in the Missouri Valley Conference, a bunch of really good ones. Illinois State, I think they're the better team. They've played against a better schedule so far this year. But, you know, I can't back a team that's just been in Hawaii for Christmas and now they come back to start the conference season. I just wanted to point this one out as one where I believe Illinois State will be a good team to back at home this year. I just think this is probably not the best spot to do it. I also think that Evansville will be a good team to go against on the road this season. Evansville doesn't have those star players like they've had in the past. Ballantyne was a really, really good playmaker for that team. They're lacking that playmaker now. I think Evansville's a decent team, but not as good as they've been in the past. Illinois State, I think there's a chance that they could be the second best team in this conference, but not a great spot to play on them here.
Where do you see this number coming out?
This one's tricky to make. I think this one will probably be about 6.5 or 7 points, something like that. Like I say, you know, if I was going to take anything in this game, I think I would take the under. Evansville plays slow. Illinois State, about an average tempo, but Illinois State's much, much better on defense than they are on offense. And Illinois State, I think they could have a poor shooting game when they're coming back from travel like they are from Hawaii.
So let's illustrate an example here, and I think that this is a good game to do it. So this is a game that, you know, as you're looking at it, you think Evansville's a team to fade on the road. You think Illinois State's a good team to back at home, but they are coming off of this Hawaii trip. So this is a game that you don't have a ton of interest in, but of course you're going to set a line for it. So if this number comes out, you know, if it comes out 6.5, 7, it's an easy pass. Do you have a buy point in mind? And if so, you know, is it different from your buy points on a game where maybe, you know, it's more of a lean where you're like, well, I like this side a little bit, but the two spots, you know, not particularly great. But if I get this number, I'll take it. Do you have a buy point in a game like this?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be harder for me to play a game like this than it would an average game. So what I usually do is on a game like this, you know, I say I want to back Illinois State throughout the course of the season. And honestly, I think the line should probably be higher than 6.5 or 7. I was kind of saying what I think it will actually be. So if it came out at something like 4 or 5 points, I'd have to look at Illinois State here. But I still think I would struggle to pull the trigger in this one. There are some times where you just would rather pass on a game. And, you know, if it got down to three, it's not going to happen. It's not going to be minus three. But if it were minus three, I'd play Illinois State because that's just one possession. Three is a really important number in basketball. So if it got down to that, I'd play Illinois State. But usually in a game like this, where I've looked at it and say, I want to back Illinois State at home. I don't want to back Evansville on the road. But you see what kind of spot they're playing in. I tell myself there has to be more of a spread from what I made the line than there would need to be in a normal game for me.
Well, we'll move to New Year's Eve here on Saturday, and we'll look at Villanova and Creighton. And I'm just going to go chronologically here. I know you sent them to me in opposite order, but just to make it easy, we'll go chronologically here. In the Big East, Villanova and Creighton, both of these teams 12-0 right now. So, you know, looking ahead to this game, you know, it certainly seems like Villanova should take care of business against DePaul tomorrow night. Creighton should take care of business in their game against Seton Hall at home. So we should have a couple of 13-0 teams here heading into this one. This is a heavyweight title fight early on in the conference portion of the season.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk about this game partially because it seems like nobody's talking about Villanova. You know, I know there are some really good teams with some very good young players, but let's not forget Villanova won the national title last year. And Villanova dominated this conference over the last few seasons. I worried about Villanova, whether they weren't going to have a tough enough schedule to help them in the NCAA tournament last year. But the Big East has certainly gotten better the last few years. You know, you have some pretty good teams here, Butler, Xavier, Creighton. This is a conference that's improved. Seton Hall's better as well. So that's helping Villanova. I will say that this is one where there's going to be a pace war. Villanova likes to slow the game down. Creighton wants to play really, really fast this year. They're fifth in the country in average possession length on offense, so really, really quick. Creighton's shooting 45.5% from three-point range this year. On the other side, though, Villanova, tremendous at stopping people from beyond the arc. Opponents only shooting 28.7%, so that's where something has to give in this game. I like Villanova in general. I think this is a tricky spot for them. You know, they haven't really gone on the road. They played at Purdue, won a really close game there, won by three at Purdue, and then they played at Penn, which, you know, that's not really a big test there. They've played some games on neutral courts, but this is going to be a really tough test for them at Creighton. I think Creighton certainly gets up for this game. Villanova is going to be favored in this game, probably by about 4 points here. And I think I'll probably pass on this game, but if anything, I'd look to play the under here just because I think Villanova will slow this game down. I think Villanova's defense is a lot better than the defenses Creighton's been playing against.
You know, and I was just looking at that when you said that Villanova likes to slow it down, and then I see that they've scored almost 81 points per game, and alarm bells are kind of going off in my head. But then you look at the schedule that they've played, and they've run it up against some pretty bad teams. Lafayette, Wake's not very good, Penn, St. Joe's, LaSalle. They've really run it up when they've had the opportunity. So this could potentially be one of those spots where you get some value based on the non-conference schedule because Villanova is not going to score 81 points per game throughout the year.
Yeah, and Villanova is actually first in the country in offensive efficiency. They're scoring 1.21 points per possession. That is ridiculous. They're not going to keep that up. Nobody's going to score 1.21 points per possession in conference play. But Villanova is very good on offense. They're just a really well-rounded team. Villanova is really good at fouling, not fouling on defense. So that really helps them a lot. I think that, yeah, I mean, this total is probably going to come out in the 150s. If you get a number, say, mid-150s or higher, I would have to look under here.
One more game to touch on here for this week's Handicapping the Hardwood segment. We had somebody ask us if we were going to talk about the Big Sky, and we are going to talk about the Big Sky right now. We're going to go to Missoula, Montana, where Weber State takes on Montana. This game coming up here on New Year's Eve, 4 o'clock Eastern tip. Why is it that you want to talk about this game?
Well, there's a couple of reasons I want to talk about this game. Number one, I knew somebody wanted to hear about the Big Sky, so I like talking about these small conferences, so I'm always happy to oblige that. And then the other factor is that these two teams have been the best two teams in the Big Sky pretty consistently throughout the last few seasons. I'm not sure they're the best two teams in the conference this year. I think they're both solid teams. I think North Dakota is going to be a very good team in this conference this year. North Dakota will have something to say about who wins this conference as well. But The thing I wanted to point out about the Big Sky in general, it's part of the reason I wanted to talk about this game. The Big Sky, just almost nobody plays defense here. You see some really ridiculous offensive efficiencies inside the Big Sky conference play. Montana and Weber State are two of the teams that do actually play defense. So that's why they're consistently better than the other teams in the conference. I always wonder when I look at the stats here, why the other see that. You know, Montana and Weber State are the two teams that put in the effort on defense. They're the two teams who are consistently playing for the top of the Big Sky Conference. I think it's interesting to see what Montana does as far as tempo throughout the course of the Big Sky Conference play. If you look at Montana, they said throughout the course of the season, before the season, Travis DeCure said, we are going to play faster this year. We want to pick up the tempo. You know, we don't have a really good big guy like we've had in the past. Usually they look inside, play inside out. They don't really have that big guy to get it into consistently. This year they have good guard play. So if you look at Montana, this is one where, you know, we want to see if they actually are going to play faster. In the non-conference play, they didn't really play that fast. You know, they picked it up a little bit lately. I think what they decided was they couldn't run with teams like USC, Wyoming, Washington State, so they didn't pick up the tempo there. Lately, they've been picking up the tempo against teams who aren't as good. San Jose State, UC Riverside played their two fastest possession games of the year right there. So I think Montana wants to force the tempo here. I think Weber State wants to slow it down. Weber State, Jeremy Singlin, probably the best player on the floor in this game, a guard for Weber State. Weber State just won at Utah State last Wednesday. That was a really good win for them on the road. You could say that they're possibly in a letdown spot when they play Thursday against Montana State. Then they play turn around and play quickly here against Montana. Obviously, Weber State's used to playing in elevation, so not a huge difference for Weber State as far as that. But I think that Weber State is a team that has played a really good schedule throughout the non-conference. They played at Stanford, at BYU, at Utah State. So I don't think they're going to be afraid of playing here on the road. Montana, they really haven't played a ton of games at home so far this year, but they lost to Wyoming by a point at home. They beat Milwaukee by only six, and they only beat Pepperdine by one. My lean in this game is to grab the points with Weber State. I think this is going to be a really close game, a low-scoring game. So if you can get Weber State something like plus 4.5, 5 points, then I'd like to take Weber State in this one.
Out of curiosity here, maybe in terms of a free pick for our listeners, do you feel like that Montana State game coming up here on Thursday night will be one that's in range to fade Weber State?
You know, Montana State doesn't play much defense. They shoot a lot of threes. They're going to be a lot better at home than they are on the road. I think that that game's going to be pretty close to pickup. So it's hard for me to play that game just because, you know, if I could catch points with Montana State in that game, I might take Montana State there. Weber State could be favored by a point, point and a half. But for me, you know, I need to get Montana State in the plus three range to play that one.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. So lots of good things on both the college football and the college basketball sides here from Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. What's going on over at the website right now, man?
Yeah, go over to the website and sign up for that free picks newsletter if you haven't already. You can sign up for that at huntersportspicks.com. 40 and 21, last 61 free plays sent out to the newsletter subscribers. And also I wanted to give a quick plug for the fact that I have a top-rated football total here on Wednesday. I'm actually 14-0 in my last 14 top-rated football totals. Now, first of all, I'm going to say that's obviously not going to keep happening. I'm not going to win every single one of these. It's nice to be on a run like that. Certainly have done well on top-rated football plays long-term. I've got that one up for $40 everywhere on all the sites that I sell, but I'm going to do a $30 radio special for Bang the Book listeners. So you can contact me at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter, or Kyle at huntersportspicks.com and mention the show if you want to get that one for $30.
Excellent. Definitely make sure you take advantage of that at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Kyle, appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week, bud.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks.
There you go. The full 75 minutes almost with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Coming up the rest of the week here on Bang the Book Radio, on Wednesday's show, our Gridiron Gambling Report segment, myself and Cole Ryan, for week 17, last one with us here on this season of Bang the Book Radio. And then we'll also have Wes Reynolds join us for our Wednesday Wagering with Wes Reynolds segment. Coming up on Thursday, our Powers Pick segment with Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Also, we'll do some more college basketball stuff with Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. And then I haven't reached out to him yet, but with UFC 207 coming up this weekend, hopefully we can get Jay Primetown on Thursday's show with our 90-minute mega show. And then coming up on Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment for Week 17, myself and Cole Ryan. And then the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. I'm sure we'll have some things to talk about there with the games coming up this weekend. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for joining me, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.